Welcome to another episode of Spanish History 101, brought to you by Brian Spain de Main. And today we are going to talk about one of the most famous periods in Spanish history, and especially recent Spanish history. By that I mean the 20th century. We are going to talk about the Second Republic. Now, Spain has always had difficulty existing without a monarch. And that's considering many in this country say they would prefer not to have one, that is, be a republic. But history suggests otherwise. The presence of a king or queen has tended to carry with it a sense, or at least a sensation, of stability. And over again, Spain has returned to this format. Now, returning to the year that interests us here, up until 1931, there had only been 2 years when its leaders tried their hands at forming a republic, and they soon realized that things got pretty quickly out of hand. It seemed as if no one could agree on anything, the format, the way the government should be, the way the framework of that country should be, and the regions like Catalonia and the Basque Country started to rub their hands and plan for outright independence. This was back in 1874, and it was the first republic. And after just 2 years, the monarchy was restored for another 57 years under what has been known as the Bourbon Restoration Period, that went all the way up to 1931. And that is when Spaniards pretty much decided that they were sick and tired of royalty and wanted to give a republic another shot. That came about in April 1931, when Spain held elections, municipal elections. Now, it was not directly a referendum on King Alfonso XIII's reign per se, but the outcome essentially sent a clear message to the king that he was no longer wanted. Alfonso deliberated for a day or two and then decided to step aside and leave the country. This immediately kicks off the Second Republic of Spain, and for the following 5 years, it will be teeming with unrest, instability, and growing violence, and the situation will unravel into chaos and then civil war. And yet, at the same time, and this is what makes it such an interesting period, some of Spain's greatest and most progressive policies were passed. In many ways, the country leapt into modern times and caught up with a lot of other countries from around Europe and America. These were crazy times in general. Half the industrial world was suffering from a major economic depression, and then radical political movements like Nazism and fascism and communism and so on were on the rise and clashing with each other. So these were some of the things that Spain at this time was trying to grapple with, and it wasn't going to be easy. Now, this is a very complex period, not easy to explain, so let me try to sum up what we have here, because as I said, it's tricky and we need to look at it as simply as possible, but without oversimplifying. Anyway, as a government, you had what was called the President of the Republic, who performed similar tasks to what the king did before. He was the head of state, and he would try to help the government get organized. And then you had a presidente del gobierno, who was the prime minister, and we will see many of them in the next 5 years. The Second Republic lasted officially from 1931 to 1939. Some sort of cut it off at 1936 when the Civil War begins, but that is an unfair and inaccurate, because it is the legitimate government of Spain until the end of the Civil War in 1939. Now, there were four basic periods of this republic. We will focus on the three periods today. After a provisional government was set up for a few months before things got organized, you had basically a first legislature known as a biennium, which was a two-year period that lasted from 1931 to 1933. It was progressive, liberal. It was called the reformist biennium. And then you had elections in 1933, and a more conservative legislature came on and was in control of the government for the most part for the next two plus years, from 1933 to early 1936. And then you had the elections of February 1936, in which the left-wing Popular Front narrowly wins the elections and beats the National Front, the conservative parties, and that will lead us to the Civil War. And then after that, you have this final period, which is the Spanish Civil War, 3 years of terrible fighting. And in the end, the Republican government falls and Franco takes over. The Republican government will be forced into exile in 1939. So anyway, once Alfonso left, the Republic was proclaimed and a provisional government was established until the Constitution could be ratified, and that came in December of 1931. The first president of the Republic, the head of state, was a man named Niceto Alcalá Zamora, and he initially acted as prime minister during this provisional period until the government was up and running. He will be president of the Republic all the way up until May of 1936. The first big legislature will be headed by a man named Manuel Azaña, who will be prime minister for the next 2 years. This period, as I mentioned before, was known as the first biennium or the reformist biennium. And it was marked by extensive reforms in many different areas of Spanish society, mainly focusing on progressive, somewhat liberal, and left-wing policies. During this period, if we look at the Constitution and a number of the laws that were passed, this is a time where there is a freedom of movement, freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of free association, and the right to gather. You also had different regions which were granted autonomy. Catalonia would be the first to establish its new status under its Estatute of 1932, where it would reestablish some of the institutions it had lost all the way back at the beginning of the 18th century. So many Catalans were very happy about that. Then you had a radical land reform act, which was passed and ordered the expropriation of private lands that used to belong to some of Spain's wealthiest landowners and even the church, especially land which was not being used or exploited, and they wanted it to be distributed among the laborers who had for generations and generations and generations simply been the poorest members of society and were just looking for a little land to start to make something of their lives. So that was the plan, at least. That was a pretty radical one. But then there were other labor laws which were modified to match the industrial laws, such as an 8-hour workday. Other labor laws which affected the entire country were minimum wage, Social Security, and national health care insurance. So, in many ways, we can look at some of these laws and these decisions to be pretty positive in a lot of ways. And they were helpful to a lot of people, and they, in theory, were going to help Spain modernize a little bit more. But then you had a couple of other decisions which were particularly controversial and also dangerous. For example, you had military reform. On one hand, they wanted to modernize the military, which made sense, but they also wanted to reduce the inordinately high number of officers that the military had. It was outrageous. There were too many. It was too costly. And other decisions irked the military high command. And then you had probably the most controversial ones, which were many of the anti-clerical policies that were included even in the Constitution. There was the separation of church and state, which in itself was not a net were not necessarily a bad thing, even though in a very Catholic country like Spain, it would have been sort of a shock. But it went further. For example, there were laws that wanted to remove the religious orders from educational institutions, even though many of them had been founded by the church originally. And then they gave the different religions a status of sort of an association, like a club. They tried to restrict their activities, their fiscal privileges, and in some cases, they wanted to expropriate their possessions. It, as I said, was very controversial, and the church pushed back a lot. This triggered radical acts of violence against the church. Many churches and convents were burned, and many members of the clergy were assassinated, killed, and in some cases raped. And that just polarized the country even more. And then, on a side note, another issue that was particularly important to the church was that civil marriages were now allowed. They didn't have to be religious marriages. And people were also allowed to get a divorce if they wanted to. And these were particularly sensitive issues for the church, so they were quite upset about that. Anyway, as you can imagine, the military, what I was mentioning before, didn't take too kindly to some of these reforms. And we know that they tended to act when things got out of hand, and they did that by trying to overthrow the government. That's sort of a Spanish tradition since the early 19th century. And that's just what happened in August of 1932 in Seville. A general named Sanjurjo tried to launch an insurrection. Honestly, to do something like that in August in Seville is really a bad idea. You don't want to do anything, let alone try to overthrow the government then when it's so hot out. It didn't get the backing that he was looking for, and the insurrection failed. Sanjurjo was arrested and sentenced to death, but the penalty was commuted, and he was banished to Portugal. We will find out later in a later episode just what happens to him. And then, after 2 years, the Azaña government had begun to alienate political forces on both ends, and the liberal reforms started to bring the conservative forces closer together. Now, one incident that caused a lot of controversy and especially angered different parts of the political left was the Casavieja's tragedy, where a group of anarchists who were not happy the way the land reform law was being carried out tried to take over the local police station in this town called Casavieja's. And then they holed themselves up in the house of a man who went by the name of Six Fingers. The government forces fired on them, and then they set the house on fire. And then after that, they rounded up about a dozen other residents from the town and brought them to the original house that had burned down. And they just, right there and then, shot them dead. It was a terrible massacre and did enormous political damage to the Athanya government, as you can imagine. And then in late 1933, new elections were called, and this time a new political force came up known as Theda, or Seda, CEDA. It's sort of the center-right party of Spain under the leadership of José María Gil Robles. It seemed like quite a surprise. Now, one of the factors behind this turnaround, in addition to some of the controversial laws passed in the previous legislature, was the role of women who were voting for the first time in history, or at least in the history of Spain. And many were more conservative in their stances and more religious in their beliefs, and they found the left to be less appealing in this sense. Anyway, Gil Robles was denied the opportunity to be prime minister because the president of the republic, Alcalá Zamora, feared he would be too radical. So he let a central right figure named Alejandro Lerroux take over. And so the next 2 years were sort of tough for the republic. A number of the reforms that had been passed in the previous 2 years were put on hold. And then, when the Seda party was allowed to form a part of the cabinet, because at first none of them were allowed to be there, even though they were the most voted party, unions and workers' parties from around the country protested by going on strike in early October 1934. And even whole regions like Catalonia got involved. Catalonia even declared independence briefly on October 6th. The national upheaval acquired a violent nature, but most of it was kept under control, except for in Asturias, which is in the north of Spain, where a major uprising led by workers and anarchists got rolling. Asturias is a sort of strange region, a mix, an unusual mix. It has some very conservative aspects to it, very traditional aspects to it. And yet, at the very same time, there is a very liberal working class tradition due mainly to the huge mining industry there. This moment was supposed to be like Spain's October Revolution, where the country would turn communist. And they met some initial success by taking over some of the towns and cities and declaring Asturias to be sort of a socialist state. But within days, the revolt was violently suppressed by the government, thanks in part to the military operations commanded by none other than Francisco Franco and some other generals. It was a very bloody engagement, which resulted in the death of possibly up to 2,000 people. Another 30,000 were arrested. It was a huge blow for the Republican government, which showed uncommon harshness in its repression. There were other issues like a major scandal known as the Estraperlo, which was a gambling fraud authorized by members of the government in exchange for bribes. This brought down the Lerroux cabinet for good. People were losing their patience. And finally, at the end of 1935, the national government had lost control and influence, so the president of the republic, who was still Niceto Alcalá Zamora, called for a new round of elections in February 1936. This time, for the most part, instead of having all these different parties and all these different factions, the different parties actually got together and formed two huge blocks. You had the Popular Front, which was the left-wing parties, and the National Front, the right-wing parties, and they faced off in the elections that would be probably the most important elections of the Republic. Now, at first, the Nationalist Front thought that they were going to win for sure. But in the end, the Popular Front was victorious in a narrow victory. To this day, historians debate just who actually won the elections. But anyway, that's the official result. Now, that victory led to an increasing belief by the political right that there was only one way to solve the problem, and that was for the army to overthrow the government and bring things under control. Now, the government, the Republican government, which was run by socialist prime ministers at this time, was aware of the threat and actually removed a number of generals, including Franco, from their posts in Madrid and sort of spread them out in different parts of Spain. It was sort of like a divide and conquer strategy. Franco was relocated to the Canary Islands, which was about as far away as you could go. But that didn't stop the planning from continuing under the supervision of General Mola, who was stationed in Burgos. The scheme to make changes to the Republic were underway. Violence on both sides continued, and a weakened government seemed unable to stabilize the situation. To complicate matters, a small party whose influence had been nearly negligible up to this point was on the rise, and violence was one of its strategies. It was known as the Falange, and it was the Spanish version of Italy's Fascist Party and Germany's Nazi Party. The head of the party was José Antonio Primo de Rivera, who was the son of Manuel Primo de Rivera, the general and former dictator of Spain during much of the 1920s. In April of 1936, the government would actually arrest him, and they would eventually send him to a prison in Alicante. And in the future, we will tell you more about his fate when the time comes. Despite the victory by the Liberal Popular Front, the initial aims of the government were to adopt a moderate position to avoid things spiraling out of control, but it was basically too late. The chaotic situation only confirmed the army's belief that it needed to bring order to the country. Now, a major uprising was designed and planned for some time after July 15th. To make matters worse, on July 13th, a well-known politician named José Calvo Sotelo, a monarchist and controversial figure, was taken from his home in the middle of the night by a small detachment of soldiers and socialist militia and shot almost immediately in the car in revenge for the death of a paramilitary policeman known as a Guardia de Asalto. The man was named José Castillo, and he had been killed just a few hours before. This is often considered to be the moment that tipped the road to civil war to the point of no return. Now, in all fairness, the insurrection was already underway, or at least the operations, the previous operations, were underway by a few days, but it certainly would sway many people who were up to that point unconvinced of a coup. And one of those people who were still a little bit doubtful about what to do was Franco himself. Now, on July 17th and 18th, the uprising began, and with it, the infamous Spanish War. But that's going to take some time to work out, so we will wait until the next episode or two and talk more about that. Just to sum up, the Spanish Republic was a very tense and complex period in Spanish history, a period which leaves few Spaniards indifferent. Political standpoints, family history, and biased representations of the facts in the past have made every square minute of the 6 years an object of relentless scrutiny. Rarely will you find agreement on anything. Now, one thing is for sure, these were turbulent times. In the 6 years that were 5 years really that we were talking about, there were two presidents of the Republic, 17 different prime ministers, and 27 administration and cabinet changes. So something was definitely not going right. But we'll stop there, and that will be all for this episode of Spanish History 101. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us any questions or comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, and Castos, or you can check us out on YouTube and subscribe. If you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. Our podcasts are free, so you can enjoy them, but we welcome listeners to support us if they wish. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.